Jeffrey Wells from Hollywood Elsewhere. And moderating tonight, wonderful Anne Thompson from Variety. Thank you, Anne.
Pleasure. So I'm going to start with Sasha.
Okay.
We're going to run down and have everyone introduce themselves and give a little background in terms of where they come from and how they got to where they are now.
Well, I started Oscar Watch 9 years ago, right after my daughter was born, as something to do while I was at home with her all day long. And everybody was creating the startup websites back then in the 90s. And there weren't really blogs yet, but people were, you know, finding their way on the web, and everybody was sort of inventing it as they went along. It was really like the Wild Wild West. It was great. And I started a website about watching the Oscars from the start of the year through the season to see which films, had the best chance of being nominated and winning. And then I got sued by the Academy.
After she became successful.
Yeah. And so then I just recently changed the site's name to awardsdaily.com. So we hope it'll still be the same as it was when it was Oscar Watch. So that's what I do now. Watching the Oscar race still from the beginning of the year through to the end. And beyond.
I'm a paid blogger on MediaBistro.com, Fishbowl LA. We cover LA media, and media means everything from video games to blogs to newspapers to books to idle chit-chat I picked up hearing in line at Trader Joe's. LA means anything west of Chicago. My day job is a TV producer. I've worked on a lot of documentaries. I also do DVD packages. And those worlds, unfortunately, just coincided, or rather collided, is that I was working on the DVD for the CBS series Jericho, and my non-disclosure prevented me from blogging about what was going to happen if the show ended, and what the fans were doing, and what the producers had planned, and I was dying. This was the hardest, because I really did, I was like, I'm hooked. I really do want to blog about this, and I can't. Right now I'm working on a documentary about popular culture and religion with Bill Maher, and I can't write about that either. But I've been a print journalist, and I love living in LA, I love entertainment, I love trashy gossip, and I love highfalutin gossip, too.
Jeffrey Wells.
Well, I come from print. I started out in sort of big time in the early 90s, Entertainment Weekly, and I started doing a column for the LA Times Syndicate in 94 to 99. And I guess I was one of the first print guys to go over to online. I started an online column in 98 called This is Showbiz. Then I signed up with Real.com, same thing, a salary columnist. That was from 99 to 02. And they went bust after the dot-com collapse of late 2001, and was hired by Kevin Smith for 2 years to be at his site called Movie Poop Shoot, again on a basic salary basis, and then he cut me loose, saying he couldn't afford me, and at that point, the internet economy had started to revive and bounce back, and I was able to, I just had to learn everything, because I had never really learned the mechanics of, you know, putting a site together and how to assemble it all, and I gradually learned it after 2 or 3 months of very strenuous study. And I was lucky enough to get ads from Fox Searchlight. I'll never forget their generosity and faith, because that kind of made me legitimate when they gave me the first ad in September of 04. And I've been able to do pretty well, actually. I've better each year, and it's been growing and everything. And particularly, it started growing I forgot to mention, I started calling it Hollywood Elsewhere in 02. And the business of it and the volume of it leapt up big time in March of 06 when I dropped the idea of being a print columnist and writing two columns a week, and I started doing this daily thing where it was like 8, 9, 10 stories a day. Not stories, but you know, longish items, some of the stories. And that kind of made a big difference in terms of the volume and the number of unique visitors and page views and all that. So it's going pretty well. So That's it.
So your traffic is going up a good deal. I mean, what would be an average day in terms of page views on your site?
I forgot what page views are, but
unique visitors.
Unique visitors. It's not that. It's nowhere near what other people are, but it's about 10 grand a day and 300,000 a month.
That's pretty good.
And the way I look at it is pretty good. Yeah. But the way the advertisers look at it, they kind of go, yeah, you know. Some of them are not that impressed. But.
It's more about the target of who reads you, though.
Yes, it's a site that gets a lot of early adopters and what I call Ubers, people that are heavily into the whole film scene and you know, sort of being in the forefront of whatever's the latest thing. And so that counts. And it's also a very the main income comes from the Oscar season, which kicks off, you know, September, October, and into March. So it's like 6 months of really flush advertising and 6 months of...
Flex the trades. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Do you get advertising for the Oscar season as well, Sasha?
I do. I do now. That is actually what ended up getting me sued, because it was great to be getting advertising, but the Academy felt that if I was going to be making money off of what they considered to be their name, then I had to change my name. But yeah, the answer is I do. That's, you know, the site's main source of income would be Oscar season. It has yet to branch out for year-round advertising, so it's targeted to that one ad.
So is this considered your full-time job? I mean, is this how you make a living?
No, I actually do a lot of different things. I do, you know, freelance writing. I spend a lot of time just you know, being a mom, which is really what I do most of the time. I only do the Oscar thing sort of part-time, but I can't really say that it's a good living yet. It's not really a complete living at this point.
And how many hours a day do you put into it?
Well, the funny thing about it is that it's kind of a 24-hour-a-day job, because you're always thinking about it. Anytime you see a movie, anytime you read anything, you know, commercials, anything on TV, always that part of your mind is thinking, okay, well, how does this figure in? And I think that really is what separates bloggers from journalists, because bloggers never really stop working. They're always working.
They don't sleep.
You know, they don't sleep. They're not being hired to do a story. They're just always doing a story.
That quote from Harvey Levin in the New York Times 2 days ago. Harvey Levin is the one who started and runs TMZ, the gossip site. He said he was had doubts about being a celebrity gossip site, but he realized he had a moment of clarity about the whole thing. That if you are not thinking in terms of daily deadlines or if you're thinking about a 24-hour cycle, you can beat anybody and be faster and be on it much, you know, quicker than print.
Absolutely. So. And you're in it for a different reason. You're wrapped up in it. You're mm-hmm. personally involved in how your story is unfolding. Like, Jeff's site is a really good example of that. His whole, you know, his personal life and his life is woven into his blog. So he is doing the entertainment stuff, but he's also kind of blogging on his life and how, you know, how it all fits in to one picture. And so he's passionately involved in it, you know, and as am I. I mean, I never started my site thinking, this is a great way to make money. It's a terrible way to make money. And it's a terrible reason to go into blogging. But if you're passionate about it and you have something you really want to say, you just do it.
So your filter for everything that you're thinking about is, what is the Oscar angle on something? But you sometimes blog about other things that have nothing to do with the Oscars.
That's right. I try to give a good picture of the Oscar race, but since people keep coming to the site, even during the off season, I have to kind of keep it going. So it's just kind of expanded a little bit now to, you know, watching the way the industry is, you know, on even the internet, how it's evolving, and you know, all of that stuff.
So, Kate, did you ever think that you were going to be interested in the comings and goings of Hollywood celebrities?
Well, I guess. I mean, I would have been somebody who in the 30s and 40s would have read fan magazines. But the thing that's cool about it now, this sounds awful in a way, is that living in Los Angeles, you really can't avoid the entertainment industry. even if you teach public school or you work at Trader Joe's or you sell china and glassware at Neiman Marcus, it somehow impacts you in some way. And since it impacts you, you'll then therefore have an opinion on it. And I'm always really interested in the opinions of people who are not necessarily tastemakers or people who go to opening nights or screenings, but who still have that peripheral touch to it. You know, I'm as big a gossip junkie as anybody else. I love to know when somebody skips the busboy or screams at the valet. You know, I like that. I mean, they're just as human as me. But what I also like about blogs and why I would read people is I can read a million different reviews of what movie to see on Saturday night, but if I read Hollywood Elsewhere, I'm getting a really personal take on it. I know that Jeff went to the festivals, he went to Aspen, he went to Cannes, he went this, he went that, and I can see how either his view of a film has changed, or I can refer back and see what he thought about something early on. I mean, I had just done a series of posts about what various people in the film industry, including Anne, wanted to see at this festival. And I got a bunch of emails back from people that were that I really want to see Billy the Kid. It got savaged in the Variety review. And I really have to see for myself, which I was fascinated. I have to say it's a film I hadn't thought about. I didn't know very much about. And so I had to go back. I found the Variety review so I could link to it. And the guy was so brutal compared to what everybody else I was reading. Now I really do want to see it. I was fascinated. And I think that that's a cool thing about the internet, is you can compare people's opinions. And people aren't consistent. But it you know, when you get slammed with your first opinion in pixels, so to speak, it humbles you up, or else you have to defend your argument that much more, too.
So I would be curious to know, Jeff, what is your typical day like? I mean, when you start, what time do you get up, and how do you process these things? And you know, give us an example of how you would put a number of different items together in a morning, say.
Well, for some reason, I don't seem to have it in me to write late at night, but some people are really good at that. I can't seem to get at it until I wake up around 6:30 and. And I tell myself, don't go right to the computer, you know.
Try to read the paper.
do a shower, tidy up, do the thing. And like, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I went, oh, Jesus, I went right to the computer instead, you know. that's a problem. I mean, it's always, I'm always like, you know, because it's hard to just, to come up with decent stuff. I don't like to just bang stuff out and just say, well, this is kind of interesting, you know, I like to kind of get into it and think of an angle and think of something original to say. If not original, then certainly opinionated, or, you know, just something that's a little challenging. So that's not something that just comes quickly, not all the time anyway. And but I know that it's just the hours fly by every day. And I know that I've decided that I have to wash the clothes, and I have a room downstairs. And really, literally, it'll take me 2 to 3 days to actually put the clothes down in the wash and get the quarters and everything. And then another day to kind of make sure that one load is completely done and put it in the dryer. I swear to God, it takes me 5-6 days sometimes to do a wash.
You sometimes express guilt that you haven't blogged for a period of time. What you seem to have, it's like there's some God, you know, judging you from above.
Yeah.
If you don't blog.
There's nothing more depressing than to go to your column or go to David Cohen's column and see all this new stuff that has come up in the last 4 or 5 hours, and I've only done 2 or 3 things. And sometimes I get so upset that it's not, that I haven't generated what I feel in my quota, which is like 8, 9, 10 short. And you can't let yourself succumb to that, but it happens, and you just have to be driven about it. You have to be obsessed about it. Once you get into the idea, when I first started doing a column, which was the LA Times Syndicate, 94 to 99, and they said, basically, you have to turn in the column every Wednesday, they'll come up on Friday, and it'll have to be about 1,000 words. You can make it 850, but no, 850 to 1,000 words. And I was shattered. I was almost frozen in fear at the idea of having to come up with something, you know, engaging that would be 850 words every single week, you know, involved. And, of course, you had to do it more of a straight-laced, couldn't do as much attitude and opinion. And I and here I am doing like, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 quasi stories, you know, kind of extended items that sometimes build into stories. So it just taught me that you should never really, you should never underestimate your ability to crank out stuff. In fact, sometimes the less you have in your mind, the more interesting the pieces.
Well, when I'm in the zone, which is in the morning, usually when I'm home, it doesn't work so well at the office. There's a kind of quiet cone that comes over me, and I'm just responding, and I'm just, you know, doing my thing. But the other question I have is, sometimes there's a benefit to letting a little bit of time go by and also figuring out what your real angle is. Like, is it a terrible thing not to respond to something immediately?
Yes, it's absolutely terrible.
It's terrible. You have to be quick and fast and first.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that.
Neither do I.
I think that holding off on something can in itself be quite a comment. You know, a loud, resounding comment.
Right.
If you're refusing to pick up the story, you know, the people that come to our site have them all bookmarked, and so they go boom, 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 and they see them all. And so how boring is it to go to every site and see the same story covered?
Especially now, it's more competitive now.
It's more competitive.
Well, and then you can round it up, so you can compare what people thought, and you can link to their previous takes on it. I mean, I think that's kind of a good thing, but the joy in the internet also, and the joy of the blog, is that you can post something and 5 minutes later, you can go back to that entry and fiddle around with it. You can add a little something. I mean, you can say update. I very often will put up a story really fast the minute it breaks or the minute I find out about it, and then I can go back and add more links
updates.
And update.
And corrections.
Correction.
That's what's good about having people read. They give you your corrections.
I know. I was going to say one of the great things about the blog is the interactivity with the people who read the site. A lot of Jeff's site is a great example of this. I keep bringing you out. But the commenters on your site are so interesting and funny and vital and, you know, abusive and all these things. And so people tune in. Okay, he posted this item about this news event. Well, let's see how people are going to react. Oh, my God, 78 comments to that. Okay, so those taking it on to, you know, now they're arguing about, you know, politics and who's going to be president, and, you know, it's just, you know, you create this kind of community.
Oh, and it's a whole little community. I mean, I had never had a blog because I always said I wasn't going to write unless I got paid for it, but I had been a constant commenter on another journalist site, and that's how I got my job. But you do, you become this little world on Kathy's site, and you become this little world of commenters. You might not know the person in real life.
Yeah, what I was kind of surprised is that when a couple of main directors started reading and commenting and using their own names, I mean, most people, when they comment on these things, use nom de plume. And I just assume that's the way most people handle it. And then Mike Binder, the director of Upside of Anger, and Reno, he started responding. And then George Hickenlooper started coming in. And Don Murphy, the producer, comes in. And others that have not identified with it, but I've found out that a lot of filmmakers are, reading and commenting on a lot of the stuff that goes on, which is kind of,
You're sometimes an enthusiastic supporter of certain directors, someone like Guillermo del Toro, for example.
Yeah.
Do you think that sometimes the directors are trying to enlist you as an invested participant in their movies doing well?
I think it starts with really liking what they're about, or it's never just, oh, he's a nice guy, even though his movie sucks. I've never felt any allegiance, I try to, obviously anybody in this industry tries to, you know, you have passions, you have people that you want to, know, you want to be able to have some kind of a relationship with them, but it always starts with my liking and wanting very much to know them because of the quality of their work.
One of the great things about the directors, you know, popping up on these sites is that they are suddenly, when I first got on the internet back 10, you know, many years before there was even a web browser, right? This is like way back when people were, you know, just sending messages on listservs and things. And Gail Ann Herr, the producer, came into a little community that I belong to. And I remember she got chewed up and spit out, and she left.
And the same kind of thing is happening, or happens on Jeff's site, except they don't leave. But they are suddenly on a level playing field with the commenters, who most of them are anonymous. And so they start, you know, challenging the director in a way that he or she probably hasn't been challenged before. You know, they're surrounded by yes people, and suddenly on the net, they have to defend why their movie sucks, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting. Okay. You can learn a lot about what fans think about movies in a way that you never could before. And some of those fan sites are astonishing to go through the threads and see what they're, you know, and I sometimes just browse through that. You could get lost in that stuff.
I was a friend, and I consider myself not a friend, but a good acquaintance of Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson and those guys when they first came to town in 93 to start their deal with Jim Brooks to make Bottle Rocket. I knew them well enough to hang out at their house and, you know, go to movies with them and things like that. And but the breaking point happened when I ran a review of the Royal Tenenbaums 2 days before it opened at the New York Film Festival. It had been seen on a Tuesday, and I wrote that I posted the review, which was not a pan per se, but it was kind of a slightly disappointed. You know, it wasn't. I wasn't saying that it was a bad film. I wasn't giving it a C or a D grade. I was giving it like a B minus. And you know, because it's Wes Anderson, he's operating at a very high level. And what happened is that I posted a little bit early, and they felt that that was injurious, and they got very upset and angry, and that was the end of it. Once you become friends with, or not friends, but you know, allies, devoted fan, you know. You're expected kind of to stay that way, and if you have a different opinion, they get kind of upset, and you get kind of fired as their
professional friend.
Well, mm-hmm. Say, don't you think that's really true in Hollywood, though, where everybody's always really 50-50? They, you know, you go to meetings, even if they hate your guts and think you're a fool, they're always, hi, great to see you, da da da. But in the blogosphere and on the internet, you know, a cat can look at a king. You can say, I think you suck. You're overpaid, and you know your boob job is ugly, and they can't do anything about it. I mean, in a way, I respect artists like Courtney Love, who has a site, or she goes to Velvet Rope, and she'll post and she'll say what she thinks. And yes, it breaks down that barrier between celebrity and those of us who buy tickets. But on the other hand, it's engaging. And although I notice that she hasn't been posting anything about Kurt Cobain's image in those Doc Martin ads or on the lunchboxes, but still, you know, ka-ching. Yeah.
Well, that's changing the way people are doing business in Hollywood. I mean, IndianaJones.com is announcing straight to the public. It doesn't go through any intermediaries. And the interesting thing about some of the blogs out there is that there are no bosses or intermediaries to go to. Now, in your case, Sasha, you're your own boss. You can do whatever you want, right? Mm-hmm. What are the limitations on what you can do?